DW.
Rush hour in Shava, 25 kilometers north of Bangladesh's capital, Dhaka. An eight-story complex called Rana Plaza collapsed here in April 2013, burying the people who were working here, sewing clothes for the European market. Today, grass and weeds have grown back, and the piles of rubble, steel, textiles, and bodies have long been removed. 1,136 people died here, and a further 2,500 were injured. Mokshuda looks at the food stalls and small businesses blocking the view to where the tragedy happened. It's a hot and humid summer day, and she's wearing a faded sari and a white cotton cloth that's wrapped around her head and falls down to her shoulders. The 45-year-old woman looks tired.
2 days after the collapse, the rescue workers found the corpse of my 18-year-old son here. I come here regularly to pray for him. I often meet other mothers who had children who died here as well.
Two oversized hands are sticking out of the concrete, holding up a hammer and sickle. The small memorial was erected by left-wing students to mourn the victims of the biggest industrial disaster in the history of Bangladesh. The government didn't think erecting a memorial was necessary. Rana Plaza has become synonymous with the social injustices of the textile industry. People, especially in the global south, toil in dangerous factories, often earning next to nothing, producing clothes mostly worn by people in the global north. The textile factory of Rana Plaza should have never existed. It was built in a swampy area with a structural engineering calculation that wasn't meant to hold heavy power generators. Even before the collapse, there were cracks in the walls, but the managers still forced the women sewing to continue their work. After the catastrophe, there was international outcry, putting pressure on factory owners and especially their clients, fashion companies from the global north, to stop the inhumane working conditions. State Inspector Sanjoy Kumar Das is one of the people responsible for making sure factories are abiding by the law. He's standing on the rooftop of the factory Hope Loon. Next to him is the factory's staff manager. From up here, the men can see a construction site, skyscrapers, small huts, and the traffic on the busy street below them. The sound of a muezzin fills the air. But right now, Sanjoy Kumar Das is focused on the staircases and doors of the factory.
You notice the door is open so that in any accident occur here, worker can easily gather there and rescue can be done smoothly. For that purpose, I visit whether the door is locked or not. That's why I came here.
All the doors are unlocked, so the inspector checks it off his list. Then he starts asking the staff manager about emergency drills.
Actually, every 6 months, fire department also used to come to see our practice. And every month, we are doing ourselves.
For several hours, the state inspector looks at the factory and walks through the floors where fabric is being sewn and packaged.
Hopna, card number?
He talks to the workers as well as the company doctor, checks the stack of medicine and dressing material, inspects the generators, the cafeteria, and even the company daycare, all the while checking things off his list. What he's not happy about is how workers are loading large bales of clothing in the courtyard. He warns Hope Loon that the factory has to make sure the bales are within weight limits and aren't too heavy. In the eyes of the workers, Hope Loon wasn't always a model factory. Employees were put under massive pressure when they tried to form an independent workers' union. Young, confident Urmi, who's now a member of the Workers' Council, says they received threatening letters and were told they'd be fired if they continued advertising for a workers' union. But that didn't stop them. Today, Hope Loon has advanced to a flagship factory. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't let journalists in. And they're not the only ones. Independent experts like Rob Weiss says textile factories in Bangladesh, which focus on producing for export, have improved their working conditions a lot.
The safety in the factories is greatly improved since 2013.
The former trade unionist from the U.S. is heading the Bangladesh Accord, an organization funded by roughly 200 fashion companies from Europe, unions, and civil rights organizations. It was founded after the catastrophe to ensure the safety of factories in Bangladesh. Weiss has suggested meeting at the German Club in the capital of Dhaka, which is shielded off by a high wall. Non-members need an invitation to be granted access. They have to show their ID and go through security. Weiss prefers meeting points like this ever since a restaurant that was frequented by foreigners was targeted by Islamic fundamentalists in 2016. 20 people, mainly foreigners, were taken hostage. 28 people died. The hostages, 6 terrorists, and 2 police officers. The Bangladesh Accord, headed by Weiss, has already conducted more than 36,000 inspections. Some of the factories had to close down, and more than 1,200 were refurbished. Those who work in a factory that was cleared by the Bangladesh Accord don't have to worry anymore that the building will collapse and bury them alive. But workers now face a new threat, being replaced by machines. The name of the company, Hopluen, means Great Hope. The company is made up of 8 textile factories in China, Indonesia, and Bangladesh. Over 6,000 people work in the factory in Dhaka alone, 85% of whom are women. Nearly 3,500 sewing machines are rattling on different floors, with huge fans attached to the walls scooping air into them. The seamstresses are wearing light saris and are often barefoot. They sew underwear for H&M, CNA, Carrefour, and Lidl. Next to them are blackboards with underwear sewn correctly and incorrectly. They sew 3 million pairs every month. Their shift starts at 8 a.m. and goes until 5 p.m. They get a lunch break and can go to the factory's cafeteria, where cooks are scooping rice and curry out of large pots onto plates.
Lunch is totally free of cost.
This is sufficient?
Yes.
From you?
I think they can take several times. If they... And here the curry, there is another curry, there is food and there is vegetable also.
Machines don't need food, a break, or free time, though. They work accurately, and so automation is a big topic here at Hopluen, says factory manager Sunta Ralingam Amiltan.
You know, we had this debate when the last minimum wage adjustment came in.
That was in November 2018. Hopluen, which was founded by a Swedish man named Erik Rud in 1992, wants to expand its business and double production within the next 5 years. The trend is moving towards bigger and bigger companies, and the competition is cutthroat, especially in the sewing business. In Bangladesh, the number of companies producing textiles for export has decreased by 2,000 since the tragedy in 2013. Now, there are 4,000 companies left. Efficient production plays a central role when it comes to their survival, and that's where machines come into play.
Yes, market becomes very competitive now, right? The person who gets the lowest cost, you know, gets the business.
China is leading the way and is trying to counter rising wages in the textile industry by switching to partly or fully automatic operation. At the beginning of his career, manager Amiltan was advised to work with the car manufacturer Toyota, one of the front runners in industrial automation.
So when I was in Sri Lanka, yes, you know, I was placed in Toyota for like 6 months. You know, there was nothing to do with garments. I was assembling cars. Why? Because, you know, they wanted me to learn a different industry and to look at the industry in a very different point of view. So, you know, automations, you know, trying to reduce cycle times, all these things, you know, are on the card.
Robots and algorithms can manage more tasks, and they're getting cheaper. So to put that into perspective, take the production of an iPhone 7 storage capacity. In the 1980s, it would have cost $1.2 million. Today, it costs just $220. Carved wooden chairs sit around a large, dark square table in this city villa in Dhaka. A crystal chandelier hangs overhead. Orchids, silver trays, and artwork adorn the room. On the wall, there's a painting of a woman in a sari, a bird perched on her shoulder. This is where the president of the powerful Bangladesh Garment Manufacturers and Exporters Association lives. She's away traveling at the moment. Vice President Asif Ibrahim is candid in his assessment of power relations in the country's textile sector.
The way it exists now, it's not a very fair industry.
His colleague, Miran Ali, is the managing director of Bitopi Group, a family-owned textile company that's been manufacturing denim clothing for export since the mid-80s. When talking about the automation of textile factories, the businessman becomes serious.
This has already happened. It has already happened in one sector. In the sweater industry, pullovers and sweaters, it used to be done entirely by hand, entirely manual. Until 4 years ago, almost every factory in Bangladesh was run with men running flat knit machines by hand. Almost by surprise, we were surprised to see in a couple of years, it is all gone. And it's now all Stoll from Germany, Shimashiki from Japan, all sorts of new machines. A Stoll machine 7 years ago or 8 years ago was still in existence, but it was too expensive. It was not cost-effective. The price today has come to a level where it is cost-effective, and it is cost-effective now to replace your manual labor with these automatic machines. So this has happened. Now, we did not notice a massive social dislocation because the Bangladesh economy is growing fast, and it could absorb these excess people.
Bangladesh's economy is growing exponentially. According to a World Bank forecast, it'll be the fastest-growing economy in Asia in 2020. Soon, the country could even be shedding its status as a developing country to join the ranks of middle-income states. Miran Ali becomes thoughtful as he reflects on the changes taking place.
The time will come when another aspect of our industry is going to get automated. And we may not be as lucky as we are now to reabsorb those people in another sector.
The entrepreneur says the oldest industrial sector in the world has reached a turning point.
It's a very tall task, and because this has not happened before. When the industry moved from Germany to Eastern Europe and then to Turkey, it was the industry, the manpower-intensive industry that was moving.
Bangladesh is trying to meet this challenge by giving its population a digital education in schools and in training centers. This is an important step for the future development of the textile industry, but it's also crucial to ensure people are qualified to take on other jobs.
Assalamualaikum and good morning.
Anika is a 12th grade student at a high school in the city of Shava in the greater Dhaka area. There are already 22 rooms at her school where teachers can use computers and projectors during their lessons, as well as a computer lab with more than 30 spots. Anika says there's also a social network for students that was launched by the state. They can post their own writing or drawings, exchange ideas, or ask questions. There's also news posted on the platform, such as what's happening in sports or tips for local events, things she finds important.
Why is Kishor Badam important for us? I mean, why is it important for teenagers like me?
The teacher introduces a network where teachers can also exchange ideas. It's called the Teachers Collaboration Hub. These projects were launched as part of the state's A to I program, which is funded by the U.S. Development Aid Organization, USAID, among others. Back in Dhaka, just outside the building where A2I is housed, there are two robot-like sculptures welded together with circuit boards and other electronic parts. The figures run forward, side by side. The artwork is called Digital Desire. Anir Choudhury heads the A2I program and advises the government on digitalization issues. He says the school programs have taken off.
So teachers are empowered, students are also empowered. We introduced this thing called the Teachers Portal about 8 years ago, which started with 23 teachers. Now it has about 400,000 teachers who share content, who share methods of teaching, who teach each other. So that's a way of peer learning for teachers.
The digital expert believes teachers in Bangladesh wouldn't otherwise be able to get trained up fast enough. There are, after all, roughly 1 million teachers in the country, but only 70 training institutes. And Bangladesh is only at the start of digitalization transformation.
Digitization is new for us.
right? I mean, we are a late entrant into the game. We've been doing this for the last 10 years or so, and the real jump, the massive jump, has happened in the last 5 years.
Apart from some model schools, not a lot has changed just yet, as can be seen in this sprawling slum in the city of Narayanganyi, southeast of Dhaka. Students assemble in the school's courtyard under the trees and repeat after the teacher. They then divide up and head into three classrooms where there are no computers to be seen. On the walls, the children have stuck up pictures they've painted, some of them showing brightly colored houses and green gardens with the sun beaming overhead. But dark clouds hang over their future. A social worker explains that 70% of the young people in this area are unemployed. Many adults are also out of work. Meena lives with her family on a path that leads past potholed roads with muddy puddles. In the cramped passageway are two blue plastic barrels for water. Some clean bowls and slippers are stacked next to them. An energy-saving lamp dangles from the ceiling. The doors are made out of wooden slats and fly screens. Meena used to work in a textile factory in Bangladesh. She earned 30,000 taka as a seamstress, which is about 320 euros. That's more than triple the minimum wage, which is 8,000 taka. But the 30-year-old says work in the factory was difficult, and they weren't given enough food to eat. She doesn't have a job at the moment. She says that an old friend from the neighborhood moved to the island of Mauritius 7 years ago to work in a textile factory. And according to reports she sent back, the pay and working environment are far better. Meena will soon find out for herself whether this is true or not. She's also just signed a contract with an agency to go and work in Mauritius. She took out a loan of 90,000 taka from the agency, three times her previous annual salary. Her 2.5-year-old son sits on her lap as she explains that she'll soon be going to the island to work for 3 years as a seamstress.
My three children aren't happy about my decision to go. But then I think about the money I'll be able to earn and send back. It's better for the children because they'll be able to get a good education.
The remittances from guest workers abroad are Bangladesh's second most important source of foreign earnings after textiles. And the automation of the textile industry could soon lead to even more women moving overseas to work. But thanks to digital education initiatives, more people in Bangladesh now also have a better chance of finding a job at home. Still, the risk of exploitation is just as high in the digital economy as it is in the analog economy. Bangladesh is already among the countries that have large numbers of click workers, people who work independently in digital supply chains. Even well-educated people starved of alternative options are competing against each other for jobs that are often basic, monotonous, and repetitive, like composing short product texts, taking on search requests, boosting the number of clicks on commercial websites, or trawling the internet for prohibited content. In a recent study, the German aid agency Bread for the World warned that digital colonialism could become a real problem. DW.